getting too old to hide it.
Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
And I'm getting too old to fight. And all these fears and these feelings I've held inside. And I'm getting too old to fight.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music with Brad Williams? From Little Rock, Arkansas, Brad leads the Salty Dogs. Their feel-good country music has been hailed by critics and fans alike and has been featured on TLC's Trading Spaces, as well as HBO's Rectify. He has CDs for sale after the show, and more can be heard at thesaltydogs.net. I'm your host, Tyler Thompson, substituting tonight for the regular host and creator of this show, Paula Martin Morrell. All right. Well, welcome to the Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. On my right here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues artist Mark Simpson. Mark can be heard on blues legend John Weston's CDs Blues at Daybreak and Got to Deal with the Blues. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. Now, how about our set back here? You like this set back here? This painting directly behind me is one that was done by our reader for tonight. Now we're going to get ready for some Southern-style storytelling. Carol Ketchen, our reader tonight, has had a long and successful career as a writer and artist. She was first published in 1952 when she was 8 years old. 10 years later, she won her first writing award with Penny Poetry Magazine at the University of Colorado. As a college student, she sold her first children's book to Scholastic Books. That book, I Was a Lonely Teenager, which she both wrote and illustrated, sold over 700,000 copies. In total, she has had 18 books published, some of them translated into Chinese, German, Dutch, and French. Her magazine articles have been published in Cosmopolitan Magazine, Parents Magazine, and International Arts Magazines. She is also a contributing editor to The Artist Magazine and a featured columnist for International Artist. Her art career began with book and magazine illustration. She has gone on to exhibit and sell her paintings in galleries and museums in America, Asia, and South America. Her award-winning paintings, sculptures, and printings have sold in 32 countries on 6 continents. Among her collectors is former President Bill Clinton. Carol currently lives and exhibits her art in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Carol Ketchen.
I had been living in Hot Springs, Arkansas for a couple of years when my contractor boyfriend, we'll call him Andy, came over for dinner. We had been dating about a year. Before I could get the chicken out of the oven, he got down on his knees and asked me to marry him. I was speechless. My previous marriage hadn't worked out well. Did I want to try again? Not really. I never imagined I would end up living in the South. I didn't even know where Arkansas was until I was on the plane headed for Little Rock. I was an artist and art writer living in Los Angeles. The city of Hot Springs invited a group of writers for a weekend visit to promote their growing art community, and someone gave them my name. It was a free trip, so I went. I found a lovely mountain town with pristine lakes, flowering magnolias, and more viable art galleries than in all of Los Angeles. I found a great little house for what a friend in LA had paid for his new Mercedes. After the last big earthquake in Southern California, I was ready to move. Living in Hot Springs required some adjustment. There were no foreign films or fresh croissant. Social life consisted of couples getting together and drinking. As a woman on my own, I didn't fit in. Maybe it was time to find a guy. I was 50, not a spring chicken, but not old in that community of seniors. I wasn't beautiful, but I had thick dark hair and big hazel eyes, and I was in great shape. Fortunately, there were several attractive single men around. The first one that came along was an art collector. He put his arm around me and said in a husky drawl, "Darling, has anyone ever told you how great you fill out a pair of jeans?" He invited me out for lunch a couple of times. I asked him if we were going to go on a real date, and he said he would rather be my friend and buy my art. "You start dating someone," he said, "and that ruins everything." The next guy was an artist. He also invited me out for lunch. Then he came to visit my studio and he brought me flowers. This is more like it, I thought, until he sent me a letter going on and on about how the woman of his dreams had just left him and he was never going to get over his broken heart. The third man was a writer with soulful eyes. He came to my studio to model for me, and he read me poetry. I asked him if we were ever going to go out on a date, and he shook his head. "You are much too intelligent for me to date," he said. So I got a Cocker Spaniel. I worked in my garden and walked around the neighborhood. There was always somebody to talk to. One woman, I'll call her Sarah, did medical transcribing out of her home a few blocks away. She liked to take her breaks walking down the street. If I was in the garden, she'd stop and we'd talk about books or current affairs. She was bright and, aside from an overbite, cute in her blonde bangs and ponytail. I never asked her to model for me, though, because she tended to rant about all the sinners who Jesus was going to send to hell. One night, at a music festival concert, I sat next to a man who was totally enthralled with the Mozart Quartet. He leaned forward in his seat and moved his head in time to the music. We spoke briefly on the way out of the concert. Andy was helping to renovate the historic hotels down the street from my house. He invited me to stop by. I did the next day. Andy took me on a tour of the old building. Then we climbed up to the roof for a picnic of the peanut butter sandwiches and iced tea he had brought for lunch. Unlike so many of the men I had known, he didn't try to dazzle me with how great he was. Instead, he asked questions about me, and he listened, really listened to the answers. There is nothing more seductive than a rapt audience. So here we were in my kitchen, him on his knees asking me to marry him. What does one do in such a situation? I opted for truthful but kind. When I told him no, he seemed even more relieved than I was. We continued to see each other off and on for the next couple of years. And then it happened, the diagnosis I dreaded, glaucoma. For anyone, the thought of going blind is a horrible one, but for an artist, it is devastating. What if I couldn't see anymore? Suddenly, the thought of marriage, having someone to share my life with, seemed pretty good. So I drove over to Andy's house. I was surprised to see Sarah unpacking camping equipment from Andy's car. I asked her, "Is Andy here?" "He's running," she said, and just then he came jogging into the yard. "You're dating both of us?" I asked, laughing as he wiped the sweat from his face. Sarah looked from him to me and started screaming. I don't remember all of it, but Jesus and liars in the flames of hell figured prominently. Then she jumped in her car and roared off down the street. Andy and I sat on the folding chairs by the front door. He said he got a great job renovating a big house on Pecan Street. I told him about the family portrait I was painting. He said his six-year-old son was coming to live with him. The boy's mother got arrested for cooking and selling meth. I told him I might be going blind. He leaned toward me and took my hand. He said, "If there's anything I can do, you know how much I love you." So I started crying and I told him how scared I was. I said, "Sometimes I remember how you asked me to marry you. I wasn't ready then, but lately I've been thinking about stability. And with you having your son, we could create a real family. I always wanted kids. Think about it. Only you'd have to stop seeing Sarah and any of the other women you might have stashed around town. I want a real marriage where we're totally committed to each other." We had a small wedding with a few of our friends and a couple bottles of champagne. The six-year-old moved into my back bedroom. I walked him to the school bus in the morning and met him in the afternoon. I read him Harry Potter at night. I hardly saw Andy. He was doing that big job with a small crew. He said this would give us a good financial foundation. I'd never seen this house he was renovating, so I stopped by one afternoon. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a woman in coveralls that looked a lot like Sarah. That night, I asked Andy about her. He said, "She needed a job, and how could I say no?" "She's got a great job," I said. "She's a medical transcriber. This town is full of doctors. Listen, you and I are married. She's got no place in our life. You should fire her." The next night, he told me, "The folks who own the house are Sarah's friends. They said if I fire her, they'll get a new contractor. Don't worry, honey. There's nothing going on between me and Sarah." Between painting and picking up after the kid and shopping and cooking for the three of us, I didn't have time to think about anything. Time passed. Then one day a friend told me, "I saw Andy's car parked in front of Sarah's house last night." I waited until the weekend when Andy was off hiking with his boy. I drove to Sarah's house and rang the bell. When she opened the door, I said, "Hi, Sarah. I thought you were a religious woman. Don't you know it's a sin to covet another woman's husband?" She slammed the door in my face. I called out, "Sarah, Sarah, I want to talk to you." No answer. So I picked up my foot and kicked in the front door. She was running around the living room yelling, "Get out of here, get out of here, I'm going to call the police." When she picked up the phone, I left. I started divorce proceedings immediately, but I wasn't quite done with Sarah. I bought a large sheet of mat board and a red marker and some tape. It's been years, but whenever I want to smile, I look at the photo on my fridge. It's the front of a white wood-framed house. Taped to the front door is a sign that reads, in red letters, "Adulteress." That's romance in the South.
Thank you so much, Carol Ketchin, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. Would you like to follow that up with any more explanation as to things that may have happened since then?
It was amazing moving to Hot Springs from Los Angeles, and it had a tremendous impact on my art. I had grown up in Denver, and in Colorado, if you've been there, you know that what everybody's concerned about is their body. You go to a party, you talk about how far you've been running, who are you playing volleyball with, where are you riding your bicycle, have you been skiing? And then I went from there to Los Angeles. And there, they are concerned about their bodies, but only in terms of looking beautiful. And everyone has a personal trainer. They've got spiritual guides. They get a lot of plastic surgery, men and women, and they all look beautiful. And from there, I moved to Hot Springs. And what I found in Hot Springs is the women really do look beautiful. There are an amazing number of beauty queens and former beauty queens in Arkansas. And I was told that if you are a woman in the South, you have to put your makeup on before you go down the stairs. So these women are always beautifully groomed. The men, however, as long as they're rich, they can be bald, have no teeth, weigh 200 extra pounds, none of it matters. And so I started changing my paintings when I came to the South. And the first series of paintings I did when I got here was a series of trophy wives, which, just were great fun to do. And I have continued to do paintings of people at parties in the South. I find them fascinating.
In addition, I've seen a number of your works. I've been struck by how often that you use people in the food industry in your paintings, whether they are cooks or whether they're waiters or whatever. Explain why.
The first painting I did of a chef was of a friend of mine who was actually a mime. And I had shot some photographs of him at a dinner party one night. He was wearing a chef's hat with his ears, it was pulled down so his ears were flopped over. And he had a long French face with a goatee and a long nose. And he was carrying, a tray. And I looked at that photo some years later and decided, what a great painting that would be. So that was my first chef. And then I started to really look at chefs and realized that a chef is like the emperor of his domain. They are in total control of their environment. And
they act like it.
They act like it, and they expect everyone else to act like it. And so I just started doing paintings of chefs and waiters and wine waiters, and the things just caught on. I did paintings for a few restaurants in Hot Springs, and there was a print publisher that licensed a number of my chef paintings to manufacturers of aprons, placemats, cutting boards all over the world. So they really did go far and wide.
That's great. You have been on the art scene for a while, and you've been very, very popular locally, statewide, nationally, and you have supported a number of worthy causes over the years with your time and your work and your art. And I was wondering if you might just mention some of those organizations or causes that really touch your heart and tell us why that you spend so much time with them.
I feel that as an artist, I'm dependent on the community. It's all the people around me who keep me alive and allow me to do what I love to do. And so I like to pay back. As you say, I've contributed to a lot of organizations, and I'm always, donating art to charity events of one kind or another. Last year, I helped to put on a silent auction of my paintings for the Arkansas AIDS Foundation. What we did is got a bunch of drag queens together, and I did a whole bunch of paintings of the girls in their outfits, and we had a silent auction, and then we brought in a bunch of entertainers who came in full costume. And that was important to me because throughout my career, the gay population has been enormously supportive of me. And I want to be able to pay back to the people who've been there for me. And what has happened, what I found out when I spoke to the guys with the Arkansas AIDS Foundation, is that people now believe that AIDS is a thing of the past, that it's not something that we need to be concerned about anymore, that it's been taken care of. But that's not true. There's still a lot of people who need help. And so that's why I've been very generous with my time and energy and work in helping the gay community in the area.
Well, thank you very much. Now we will turn it over to questions from you folk.
Tell us about your travels to the East.
I've been a bit of a gypsy my whole life. My first trip abroad was just out of college. I went to Israel and traveled around Europe. And then I happened to meet a guy at a demolition derby. Now, you have to understand, this was after the first failed marriage, which was a very normal marriage, a doctor. We were supposed to be perfect, didn't last. What can I say? I'm not normal. So I met this guy at a demolition derby, and he wanted to travel too. So I bought a backpack. I'd never even owned a backpack. And we hitchhiked across North Africa and went all the way to Ethiopia. And then a couple years later, we hitchhiked from Mexico to Peru and then returned to Colombia, where we sank a canoe in the Amazon. So I'm currently in the process of putting together a group of short stories about these various adventures. So since then, I've done more traveling. I spent some time in Nigeria doing research for a suite of etchings. And then lately, I have done a bit of traveling in China and Taiwan, which has been great fun. I was an artist in residence in Taiwan for about 2 months, and I had exhibits in Shanghai and Taipei and several smaller cities. The work that I did in Asia was very similar to the work that I've done here. I did people sitting around a table eating dinner. I did young women looking at young men, women in department stores. You know, my art is simply me talking about what I see. I think of every painting that I do as a conversation. And so it doesn't matter if I'm in Taipei or Hot Springs. I'm going to be looking at people and conveying my sense of who they are.
The last questioner was Phyllis with the Arkansas Times in Central Arkansas, who is, you've been a great partner with them for many years and done a lot of covers. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with that left-wing magazine.
The Arkansas Times has been wonderful to me. Every year they put out a neighborhood dining guide, and they pick out one of my chefs or wine stewards to go on the cover of that. And I'm just delighted, you know, that they like my work enough to do that. One of the great things about living in this area has been the amount of support that I've gotten from all of the publications, from the local magazines, from the Sentinel Record in Hot Springs. I've never lived in a city where the newspaper devoted so much space to the arts. And the Democrat Gazette's been good to me too. So I am enormously grateful to all of the publications for what they have given to me and the other artists in the area. We couldn't survive without you.
Carol, I know you're an artist. I know you're a writer. You're also a dancer.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've done competitive ballroom dancing for years. Especially when I lived in Los Angeles, that was the main love of my life. It's such a fun thing to do. It requires an enormous amount of work. I took lots and lots of lessons. and competed in several events with a professional instructor, but then I also had an amateur partner for a while. And it's just such a great way to get in touch with music and to get in touch with your body. I love dancing. I've done lots and lots of paintings of dancers.
Tell us about what you've got going on.
Oh, yes. In Hot Springs, the Women's Chamber of Commerce does Dancing for a Cause every year. And for the last 5 years, I've been one of the dancers. I've worked with one of the celebrities in town. And last year, I also did an exhibition with one of the other professional dancers. But at last year's event, there was a group of young women who are cardio dancers. And they got up on stage and they were kicking and, you know, jumping around and dancing. And they looked fabulous. And I looked around the table where I was sitting at these other old women. And we decided that we should do a geriatric cardio event. So I've got a lot of the women in Hot Springs who are like very, very involved in major activities in the community, and I'm calling our group the Movers and Shakers. So if any of you want to come to this event, let me know. It's in October.
You told us what you did to Sarah. Please give a good story of what you did to Andy.
Oh, Andy. It's not his real name, you know. There's not much you can do to someone who just has no moral base. I got divorced, and then I've gone on with my life, and I feel that that's the best revenge.
I know that the art scene in Hot Springs, I guess, is getting more mature. Back in the early 90s, Benigni and some other folks came in and really tried to get it off the ground. How would you describe where the art scene in Hot Springs is today?
It is still very strong. I went to Gallery Walk last Friday night and walked from gallery to gallery, and I was amazed to find, about half a dozen paintings that if I'd had the money, I would have bought them and taken them home. And I am a very demanding art buyer. I think the quality of art in the galleries in Hot Springs is as high as it is anywhere in the United States, including Santa Fe. And we have wonderful art there. Quite a few artists, a lot going on. The big problem that we have is the big problem that's happening all over the United States right now, and that is primarily an economic one. We've lost so many of our middle-class buyers. People in the middle class who used to be able to walk into a gallery and see a painting that they liked, you know, for $1,000, and even if they paid it out, they felt that this was not out of their reach. It's got to the point that the only people who can buy art now are people who have a lot of money. And it's making it very difficult. It's much more competitive. And what I'm finding is that a lot of buyers are bargaining more for art. And all of this is putting more and more and more pressure on the artists. We're going to continue to paint. We'll continue to find a way to do it. But it's more difficult than it was before. The other thing that's happening, and I do want to mention this because I think it's really important, so many of the art buyers that we've depended on are getting older. Their walls are filled, they're downsizing, moving into smaller places. And I want those people to start thinking about buying original art for their children and grandchildren. You know, there are so many kids growing up today not believing anything's real unless they see it on a screen. And I think that if we can expose them to original art, if they can have the experience of living with a painting on their walls, and especially something that's been given to them by someone they love, it can totally change their relationship to the world.
How can we do that?
I don't know. I'm just talking about it as much as I can. But I think this is something very, very important for people to start buying paintings for your young relatives. You know, let's open up the world to them.
Thank you so much, Carol Ketchin, for being on our Tin Roof project here at Tales from the South. We really appreciate your being here. Thank you very much. And we appreciate all of you being here, too, also. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, with additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for being a great audience. I appreciate your indulging me being with you tonight, and we'll see you next week here at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District at North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Another dollar that I lose, another wasted night I spend here sipping these cheap booze, another memory of the girl and the things we used to do. It's just another day in the life of a fool, and I'm singing another sad country song, a song about a heartache and a love that's gone wrong. This sad state of man has caused me to start thinking this honky-tonk living is gonna drive me to drinking. Another song on the jukebox that I choose, and I can't help it if I'm still in love with you. Another memory of the girl and the things we used to do. It's just another day in the life of a fool, and I'm singing another sad country song, that song about a heartache and a love that's gone wrong. This sad state of men has caused me to start thinking this honky-tonk of living is gonna drive me to drinking. Oh, this honky-tonk living is gonna drive me to drinking.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.